As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe, Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it slide, baby, diamond ring.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's coolest conversations podcast time in Little Steven's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest this time around is Irish singer Imelda May, who came to prominence in the UK as a rockabilly singer and songwriter, but beginning with her 2017 album Life, Love, Flesh, Blood, began to include all sorts of other influences in her songwriting. She'll have a new album out on April the 23rd called 11 Past the Hour, and it features a recent coolest song in the world, Just One Kiss. Let's hear some of that now, and then I'll be back with Imelda for your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Wanna fool around what you say? A simple little phrase can only go to my head.
Bad side, good side, upside down. You were fooling no one when you said let's fool around. Just one kiss.
Here for your coolest conversations, and today I'm joined by singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist Imelda May, who has this week's coolest song of the world, Just One Kiss. Hello, Imelda, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Very excited to be talking with you today. And I know you're from Ireland, but where do you call home these days? Do you still live there?
I live in the countryside in the UK, but I will be moving back to Ireland any moment, I think.
Well, have you, your family, friends remained healthy over the course of the pandemic?
More or less, thank God. My dad has just got his vaccination and he's going on walks shouting at people across the road, "I'm free!" He's making us all jealous.
Oh, so you have not gotten your vaccination yet?
No. My dad's in his 80s, and so they were vaccinating all the older crowd for us, and I was imagining that like all these 80-year-olds are going to have a rave, you know, because they can.
Right. Think about your dad and your family growing up. Now, you were the youngest of five kids, is that right?
Yes, the youngest of five. There were six of us, but my parents lost a child early on. And
so in my grandfather's family, my dad's family, there were eight, and in that last couple were pretty much raised by their older siblings. I figure with five, maybe your parents were still involved. Did your parents raise you primarily, or did they have a lot of help from your siblings?
Oh, no, my parents did. There was seven of us in two-bedroom house, you know, two up and two down, we say. Oh. Two bedrooms up, two rooms downstairs. And there was seven of us in that, and I was shared a bedroom with my parents and my brother till I was about 14. And then I got into another room and somebody left home. So it was always a great celebration when somebody left to get a room.
And you mentioned your mom being the boss. So I was wondering, since you were the baby, what kind of stuff were you able to get away with that your older siblings were not?
Oh, wow. Well, in some ways I got away with it a lot more because they knew what they were doing by the time I came along. I think they were way more chilled out with me than they were with my eldest sister. So I think I was lucky in that way. And they were older parents having me because I was the surprise baby that I think my mother thought she was going through the change, as they called it then. And but she was pregnant with me. She was almost 50. So I definitely came out of nowhere. And yes, Mam was definitely the boss of us all. And I had a little more time with them, I suppose. I had more time with my mom and dad. I was with them a lot on my own because my siblings were older or had, some of them had left. So I did get away with more maybe, yeah. But they noticed me more because there wasn't as many kids around.
Well, you know, that's interesting. It's leading into my next question. But real quickly, I wanted to say that that term that you use, going through the change, I mentioned my father's family and the same thing. He's older than one of his uncles. And it was the same conversation. She said, "Oh, Lord, May, I'm going through the change." And then it turned out to be a call. But
they called me the menopause baby for a while. They called me the menopause for the while. I was lucky to be brought up in such a creative and mad, funny, when I say mad, I mean crazy household, full of life and noise and laughter and bickering and fun, you know? So it was a great, it was a great upbringing, but very creatively free. My dad is eccentric. And my mother would encourage him to be, which was great. And, but they, I was brought up with parents who, quite unusual for their time, had a very equal relationship. And I only see that now as I'm older, that I thought that was normal. You know, my dad would give my mother all of his wages and she'd give him some money back if there was some left. And, you know, if she breastfed, she told us when she'd breastfeed us, she'd then pass the baby to him and go back to sleep and he'd win the baby because they were a partnership and they were quite happy like that. So that's quite a wonderful way to be brought up.
Wow, that's a great.
If my mom washed us, my dad would dry us, you know? It was, yeah, it was all that thing.
I was trying to figure out if you had come into rockabilly music through a, through an older sibling, or how did you wind up coming to rockabilly music?
Well, what happened was, it's, I'll try and keep it as short as I can, but that's not what I, that's not what I got into. There was so much music in the house. There was one record player with all of us. So I was listening to such a beautifully varied soundtrack to my life from, you know, Nat King Cole and Judy Garland and Bing Crosby to Mark Bolan and The Specials and David Bowie to Johnny Cash. It was, and full of traditional Irish music as well, which is very normal, you know. So that's what I was brought up with. That was around me all the time. So I got my brothers and sisters, they used to go to this club in a basement in Dublin. Brussels was the name of the bar. It was a pub and it was down the basement. They had this jam session on a Monday night and I begged them to take me with them. And I was only 16 and they did because I was obsessed with music already. And I'd figured out how to kind of double track. I used to record myself on my little cassette player and sing with harmonies and because my sister taught me my first chords on the guitar and all this stuff. I begged them to take me with them and they did. And they snuck me in past the security because I was underage. And I ended up singing in this club. And that was where I learned everything, really. I just learned so much from that club, from older musicians who were wonderful, very, very talented. And so I started singing as well as being surrounded by, like I said, traditional Irish music. Then in this club, I discovered blues and jazz and rhythm and blues. And then I got into punk and post-punk and it all made total sense to me. So that's what I started to sing and that's what I always sang. And then rockabilly came later on. Record companies started turning up my gigs after many, many years of playing. I got a band together and there seemed to be this buzz started to happen and the record companies were coming and they were saying, "We love everything that you're doing except for get rid of the rockabilly and then we'll sign you." And that was kind of a red rag to a bull with me. That made me rebel, I suppose, and do it more, but not just to be rebellious. It was because it really interested me how music can be either accepted or shunned. And it didn't make sense, especially that rockabilly I found was very influential to a lot of the music that I loved. Right. For instance, I was listening to the Cramps, who were singing so much like rap rockabilly, but in their own way. And, you know, the Ramones would know a lot of the old stuff. And I'd hear interviews with Mark Bolan and the Beatles and all these people talking about, I mean, the Beatles used to say they wanted to be a rockabilly band and skiffle group and all this. So it really got me into it to, because I wanted to dig deeper to where punk had come from, the original punk. And so I really just delved into it and I found it so rebellious and sexy and fun. And I didn't think there were enough women in it either, other than, you know, Wanda Jackson and Janice Martin and all these women. Everything flew along and I had a great time. But as a writer then, I became to feel that I had almost become a caricature of myself in a way. And mm-hmm. I was hit a wall writing wise. I couldn't take it any further than I already had done.
And so this is,
so I didn't start with rockabilly. I discovered it through being told I shouldn't like it. And so it made me explore it.
Right. And so I hear you talking about, I guess you're 16 when you go to the club, and then it's about 13 years later when this first album, No Turning Back, comes out, and you were 29. That really helped explain sort of your musical journey, because that's, you know, like 13 years, what exactly was going on. And then you have these, I guess, four albums with a rockabilly vibe, sensibility to varying degrees, not mm-hmm. just pure rockabilly, but sounds in that wheelhouse, mm-hmm. I mean, influenced mm-hmm. by, related to. T-Bone Burnett produced that album. How did you come across T-Bone? How did he become involved? And what was it like to work with him?
Oh, I loved working with T-Bone. You know, I can't remember how we met, but we ended up having this talk before recording, and we got on to see if we'd get on, and we got on really, really well. In fact, actually, I remember going out for dinner and I was reading him poetry at dinner, and he was like, do you know, I've only been read poetry a few times in my life over dinner. And he said it was always an Irish person. What is it with you guys in poetry? But I really enjoyed working with T-Bone. We got on well, and it was a lovely album to make. And a lot of people said it's a divorce album. It's not a divorce album. At that point, Daryl and I had been broken up a while, and we both mm-hmm. had, you know, other relationships that had come and gone since that as well. So I was in a fine place, you know. I think Daryl and I are happily divorced, you know. We were lucky enough to recognize things and to act on them and be really best friends now, which is wonderful.
You know, I'm glad you used that that term, that happily divorced. I myself happily divorced, and
yeah,
and you know, it depends on the person, but at first that's kind of a juxtaposition of terms that they, you know.
Do you know, it's this usual, it's people like to put things in a box and wrap it up with a nice pretty bow. And that's not the way life works, you know. They always use the mindset of happily married and unhappily divorced, and often it can be the total opposite of that on each end of it. And a lot of people live that way or somewhere in the middle, you know. I think life is more complicated than that, and I think it's easier if you just recognize that there's loads of in-betweens, and that's fine. It doesn't have to be the way it's sold to you. I think that's within everything in life, you know.
How did you feel about the reception to Life, Love, Flesh and Blood? Was that good for you, you think?
Yeah. When I wrote that album, it was a great awakening. I feel like that's almost my first album. It really feels like me, like every part of me. I wrote that in a beautifully liberated, creative way. So when I was writing the other albums, not that I didn't, I always wrote honestly, but I find a way of hiding lyrics in songs or hiding it behind crazy rock and roll vibe, you know. And yeah. I decided on Life, Love, Flesh, Blood, I wasn't going to do that anymore. And I'd kind of know what album I wanted to make. I was thinking, right, I want to push this to the edge. Like, so I want to do this rockabilly mixed with punk and mess around with production. Produced my first album myself. Mm-hmm. And I've co-produced all the other albums as well. So I knew what I was doing and I knew what I wanted to do. And the first one, I wanted it to be on Love Tattoo. I wanted it to be, you know, very raw and authentic and live. And as it went on, I thought I wanted to toy with the studios and what sounds I can get and what vibes I could get and play with it more on a production level. And then I'd push it when I was writing and go more heavy and add in all these things. So I had these plans with it, which was a lot of fun until it wasn't. And then I kind of hit a glass ceiling creatively and I couldn't bring it any further. So I decided to stop. And I definitely hit a low, which can often happen to a lot of artists after you come off such highs, you know, when you're out on the road, your album's doing well and you've been gone for a long time. And then when you stop, it's kind of like when you're working really hard and you stop, that's when you get ill, you know?
Yeah.
Isn't that always the way? You can keep it going and then that's when you catch a cold or something, is when you actually stop for a minute. And that's the same, I think, for a lot of musicians, whether it's spiritually or mentally, it's when you stop, things can hit a low because you've been holding it together and pushing it so hard. So I did hit a low, a massive low, and it was really good for me because I had to almost build myself up from scratch again and learn about myself. Because before that, I'd been on this whirlwind and touring and writing, and I'd been in, you know, I've been married for so long, which, you know, you naturally twisted and torn. I'm not twisted in a negative connotation. I mean, like a tree, you kind of, you wrap around each other, don't you? And then when you're apart, you have to rediscover yourself again. I think that's really healthy with anything, even with my career. I had to take a minute and breathe and rediscover myself creatively. And that was really healthy for me. So I decided on Life, Love, Flesh, Blood, instead of me lead the songs, I wanted the songs to lead me.
Okay.
So I'd sit down to write and I would happily not know what it was going to be, what I was going to write. I had no idea what the album was going to be. I was just going to feel it and then write it. And that's what I did. And that's why Life, Love, Flesh, Blood is really important for me personally, because it was just so honest and such a beautiful time for me that I really enjoyed that way of working. And I will never change that. I loved working in that way. And I did that on this album.
Well, let's focus on this, the new album, at least a couple of these songs specifically. The new release, the follow-up, is coming out on April the 23rd. It's titled 11 Past the Hour. And it features our coolest song of the world this week, Just One Kiss. Notes tell me it was written by you, Tim Bryan, and David Rossi. Is that correct?
Yes, it was written myself, Tim Bryan, and David Rossi. Yes.
And who were Tim and David?
David. We met through David. I was doing some other stuff, and David does all beautiful string arrangements. Like, he's a genius. He's wonderful, wonderful, creative. And he did a lot of the strings for Goldfrapp and Coldplay and U2. I mean, he's brilliant. On this album and the last album, I decided to co-write because I found my musical abilities limiting. Mm-hmm. I'd only go to as far as my abilities went. And I'm not a great guitarist by any means. And I wanted to push myself further writing-wise. So I decided to co-write. And so what would happen was I'd turn up and they'd have a piece of music written and they'd play all these different pieces, little tiny snippets of music. And I'd wait till something kind of, it felt like fishing, you know, you'd wait till you get a bite. And when I'd feel a spark with something, I'd go, oh, hang on, don't go past that one. Wait, I'm feeling this definitely. And I go into a corner and then I'll just sit and writing. I love being a lyricist. So I'd say that's predominantly what I do. I'm a lyricist, and then we'll work on melody. So I'll sit in the corner writing away I'm working on the lyrics and the melody, and then I'd start singing. And that was where each song would start. It would start with them presenting me this fabulous piece of music, me writing to it, and then we'd kind of get it going together. So it was a beautiful way to work, really fun and following the magic, you know?
So on that song, Noel Gallagher is singing with you. How did you get him involved?
I just asked him. I know Noel and we were just texting. I knew this song needed to be a duet. Mm-hmm. And I'd just been to see Noel a little while before with the High Flying Birds. And I love Noel and the High Flying Birds. They're brilliant. And I loved the gig, actually, that I went to see him. And I thought, God, he would sound so good on this song. He would just, I love his voice. I love his vibe and his writing, but I love his voice. And I thought this would really work if he'd be up for it. So we were just texting and I asked him and he said, yes. He said, send me the song if I like it. And then sure. And he liked it. And I thought that our voices worked well together. And Ronnie Wood was on it. And Ronnie plays the most amazing guitar solo on that. But the whole studio just kind of stopped. and turned around or gone, oh my God, he just tore it apart in the best possible way. It was just amazing, his solo on that. So I was lucky to have both of them.
Absolutely. And I was going to point out that on Life, Love, Flesh, Blood, you had Jeff Beck play on a track. I think it's Black.
Yes, that's right.
So you happen, you know, you're friends with Noel, and you text him and say, hey, buddy, I got this tune. Check it out. What about Ronnie Wood? How did you get him on there? Did you call up Jeff Beck and say, hey, Beck, get a hold of Ronnie?
Oh, no.
Get a gig for him.
No, because, see, I met Ronnie Wood when I was 16. So when I was singing in that little basement club that I was telling you about.
Yeah.
One night Ronnie Wood came in because he was staying in a hotel nearby. Uh-huh. And he came into the pub, heard a jam session, came down and jumped up on stage. And Ronnie and I think we jammed on Rolling and Tumbling and a couple of other songs, and we had a great time. Yeah, I was 16 when that happened. It was just so much fun. And then, you know, I carried on in bands and gigging all over the place and in different bands. And I was doing it for many years. And then I ended up working with Jeff Beck. And then we were at something together, and Jeff introduced me to Ronnie. And I said to Ronnie, actually, we've met before, we've played together. I doubt if you remember. And he just went, oh my God, you're that kid in that blues club in Dublin. And he didn't forget at all. He remembered every bit. And actually, he asked me, he has this amazing documentary called Somebody Up There Likes Me. And they asked me about this, and then I said on it, I said, because Ronnie and I, we just picked up where we left off. We've been great friends since. I said, Ronnie loves to tell everybody that he discovered me. And I said, he did, but he didn't tell anyone about me.
Well, you got Jeff Beck and Ronnie Wood. Going forward, what's the next 60s rock guitar guy that you need to line up? Who do you want to snag next?
Oh, that's not how I roll. That's not how I roll at all. No, it's when I was making this record, often record companies think on a business level, what would you do or who would you? And I never planned. I mean, I remember they were saying, we'll call one of our other artists, you know, and because they have loads, we'll see who. And I was like, I never do that. I'd say, not at all. No way. I don't do that. I like things to unfold gently and happen as they should. And that's why I call the album 11 Past the Hour, because 11:11 is a really powerful number. It's all about intuition and calling yourself to an awakening and just kind of giving yourself out to the universe and see what happens. And that's the way I work. And things happen if they're meant to. And just before I did Just One Kiss, I hadn't got anybody booked for the studio. I had the studio booked, but I hadn't sorted out the duet. And my record company was sweating, and I was saying, don't worry about it. It will happen as it's supposed to happen. It will all unfold in the right way if you just let. And all these people that I've worked with, it just happens naturally through a love of music or through you meet people. And I think if you have an open heart and you get on with people well, things happen. And I've been very, very lucky with the people that I've worked with, but it's never been a plan of mine. It's just the way they worked out, and people that I've just fallen in love with musically and, you know, personally, that I'm very lucky. Ronnie Wood is so loving and lovely and supportive, and Jeff, and they're both like family to me, you know. And that's more important to me than the music, to be honest. I love playing with them, but if I had a choice between their friendship or playing with them, it would be the friendship, 100%, hands down.
You know, I'd add to that your philosophy there. A friend of mine would describe that as proceeding as the way opens.
Yeah, things just work like that. Do you know, I remember on tour, and I'll kind of follow my nose when we'd roll up and, you know, turn into a place. And I remember in the States, in New York one time, and, you know, you have a tour manager telling me where, you know, you only have a certain amount of time, so here's a good place to go. And people planning nights out and trying to find out what's happening. And I just step off the tour bus and I'll think, do you know what? I'll just follow me nose and see what happens. And I almost always had the best night of everybody. So I'll follow my nose and meet nice people. And I think if you're led by art and led by your heart, then things just beautifully unfold if you just let them.
The other track we can take a listen from you today is a recent single off your upcoming album, 11 Past the Hour. It's called Made to Love. Mm-hmm. And when I looked up the track, I saw that, like Just One Kiss, Ronnie Wood is playing guitar on it. Is he, are those the only two songs he plays on the album?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And I also noticed two names associated with that track I wasn't familiar with. Gina Martin. And again, you're going to have to
Dr. Shola Mas-Shogbaninu.
Yes, that lady. Tell me about them and why you wanted to involve them on the song.
So I wrote this song with Tim and Davide. And I remember when we wrote this, that was one of the pieces of music that caught me, you know, immediately. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't keep up with my brain, you know. My brain was wanting to go quicker than my hand could write. Yeah. And that's always a good sign, you know. I was fired up. And as I was writing, I just wanted to write about love. And this album actually is mostly about love, and not romantic love, not just romantic love. There's lustful love. But I wanted to write about a love that's worth fighting for. And as we've been in lockdown and before lockdown, you can see things unfolding in the world, and the Black Lives Matter protests and political protests that are happening in various parts of the world. And it just makes me long for something and want to fight for love, because that's what people protest about. That's what Black Lives Matter is about, isn't it? That's what all these protests is about. Somebody saying, you know, let's treat each other with respect. Let's know history. Let's know what's happened. Let's fix it. So one day I discovered a thing that told me that there are two basic emotions. This is what the scientists have discovered and researched. The two basic emotions are love and fear, and all other emotions come from them. And that's fascinated me for a few years now. And it's really helped me figure out a lot of things, either where someone else is coming from or where I'm coming from. Okay. Is that coming from a place of love, or is it coming from a place of fear? And I figured out I would like to do my utmost to work from a place of love. And it's not always the easiest option, but it's worth fighting for, and it's worth working on that. So that's what that song is about. It's that we're made to love. Let's really do that. I was at this International Women's Day. It was Annie Lennox had organized it, I think, and then she was one of the main speakers at it. And I heard Gina Martin and I heard Shola Moss. And this room was filled with men and women, by the way. And it was so inspiring, and it was trying to improve things for the next generation, you know, for our sons and daughters, and make it better. And we should continuously strive to do that, as they should when it's their turn. And I loved hearing what they had to say. And I wanted Gina and Shola's voices on this song with me, not just musically, but I wanted their voices, because their voices need to be heard in more ways than one. And I really wanted them on this, because they fight for love for other people on a daily basis, and they have to deal with the consequences of that, which are often very, very difficult. And I just appreciate, and I'm so grateful for what they do all the time to improve life for the rest of us. So that's why I asked them to be on this song.
Now, I saw through a YouTube link, you performing song Made to Love on that Graham Norton show. Mm. Now, are those ladies on stage with you singing?
Yes.
Okay.
Both of them are either side of me. And it was just such a magical feeling. I felt that there was power in us, you know, mm-hmm. And it was so much fun, really so much fun. And I think we were all accidentally color coordinated, which was wonderful. made us
laugh. They're both in red.
You're like, oh yeah, but they were good. And I'm not trying to change the world. I'm not trying to be a preacher. I just think I love music that inspires me. And I thought, you know what? Love inspires me. So I'm going to write about that, and how let's all just love each other. And if it makes you feel on top of the world while you listen to it, and it makes you feel we can do this, then that's great. That makes me happy.
Well, then I think this is a good place for us to wrap up. And Imelda, I want to thank you so much for chatting with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me.
And now here's Made to Love, the latest single off Imelda May's upcoming album, 11 Past the Hour, in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
You killed me twice, you hung me high, blood in my eyes. crucifies the crowd around, crucified. Drag on my bones behind the lies. Dress me up in skin and robes. Hid myself among the wolves. Gonna kill me again in the name of fear. When all I do is love. Don't be afraid, afraid of love.
Made to Love. That's Imelda May here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. And that track, like Just One Kiss, is off her upcoming album, 11 Past the Hour, due out April the 23rd. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Imelda for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. And join me next time when I'll chat with Catherine Cat Popper, the bass player with Jesse Malin. We'll talk about Jesse's latest single, The Way We Used to Roll, as well as Cat's other projects. That's on your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe, Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it slide, baby, diamond ring.